Coming up, we're going to hear part two of a series entitled On This Side of Paradise, A Look at American Religions. There's a religious revival in America, but many newly religious Americans are not returning to the churches and synagogues they grew up with. Instead, they're joining religious groups outside of the mainstream, or they're reinterpreting the teachings and traditions of the religions they were born into. It is this phenomenon that is the subject of the documentaries on religion that we are featuring Tuesdays at this time in October. Last week's program was about evangelical Protestantism. Today's edition is titled Wrestling with God, America's Young Jews. Next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, the subject will be In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. And the series concludes on Tuesday, October 25th, with Singing a New Song, The Catholic Left. After each program, we'll be joined by two of the people featured in the documentary, and we'll invite you to call, to phone in, and speak with them with your questions and comments. Today's studio guests will be Jeffrey Dacrow, National Co-Director of the peace group New Jewish Agenda, and Phyllis Taylor, who in the program expresses her regret that many American Jews emphasize Jewish culture over spiritual teachings. Taylor now observes Quaker tradition, although she still considers herself a Jew. We'll invite your phone calls at the conclusion of this half-hour documentary. In the meantime, you might want to jot down the phone number, which is 923-2774. This Side of Paradise was produced at WHYY-FM for Temple University's Religion Department. Maeve McGoran is the producer, Ellen Cherry and Anthony Mateo project directors.
What holiday do you like to celebrate most?
Oh, Passover. It's very traditional and like everybody's together, you know.
I either like Yom HaMakabiyah, Yom Yerushalayim, because in school I like to see the Israel. They sometimes put up an Israeli flag, and I like to see it fly in the air and that. And in third grade, we also did a play on Yom Yerushalayim. Everybody thought it was terrific.
Do you think there's a lot of anti-Semitism in America?
Yes.
Have you ever experienced any?
Yes. When I'm walking down the street, a lot of kids say to me, "You dumb Jew." And I say, "Well, at least I'm proud of it."
Recently, I visited my family. My daughter, who's very, very pro-Israel, in fact, she's looking forward to 2 years from now when the older grandchild will be 13 and she'll be able to, want to take her to Israel for her bas mitzvah, sort of things that I don't go for. My son wasn't bar mitzvah. I don't think that we place the proper emphasis on religion. And whether they need that identification, I've never needed that identification. I knew what I was. Whether they need that identification, I don't know.
To be a Jew in America has always been a paradox. It has meant an uneasy tension between two goals: assimilation into American culture and preservation of a Jewish identity. There are 5.5 million Jews in the United States. About half of them have no affiliation with the organized Jewish community. Of those who do, most find their connection to Judaism through membership in synagogues or work with the community's philanthropic and defense organizations. But the congregations of mainstream synagogues are shrinking, and the population of Jews in America is declining. This has been blamed on three things: a decreasing Jewish birth rate, intermarriage with Gentiles, and the successful assimilation of Jews into American culture.
Do you think that maybe younger people do have trouble identifying themselves as Jews?
Yes, some of it out of fear, some of it out of shame, some of it out of not knowing what they are, because their parents haven't given them right background training on what they should be. I don't know, maybe we've put the onus on them by having lived through two horrible wars, and they're confused. They question sometimes where were the Jews during Hitler, and we were silent. My son has questioned me many times on that. He said, with all your talking, you didn't gather the people around to protest. Roosevelt didn't let them in when they came here, and they know that. They're products of that war.
Though many members of the post-war generation of American Jews have abandoned Judaism, a growing number find themselves passionately interested in the religion of their ancestors. A few are returning to Orthodox Jewish practices. Others are creating new movements within Judaism. One of these is the New Jewish Agenda, an organization of Jewish leftists. The national co-director, Jeffrey Dacrow, explains what brings Jews to the NJA.
Many of us in Agenda are people who come to the world, in our approach to the world, as Jews. Our social, political, economic agendas, our attitudes in the world are determined by our background as Jews. For others of us, progressives, leftists, liberals, in the Jewish group of New Jewish Agenda, are people who have been stimulated to come to Agenda not because initially they felt driven as Jews to come to such an organization, but rather they found themselves being driven out of other organizations of progressives because those organizations didn't understand or themselves were complicit in anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic kinds of behaviors or attitudes that didn't really reflect the authenticity of our identities.
The NJA's political goals include peace in the Middle East, nuclear disarmament, and reproductive freedom.
We are concerned with a whole variety of issues as progressives and as Jews. And as such, we are not interested in taking positions of self-interest, but rather of historical interest, by which I mean what is the long-term agenda of the Jewish people. With the disarmament issue, we have sought clearly to align ourselves with the peace community because, as an obvious matter of fact, we understand the Jewish tradition, whether it be the religious Jewish tradition or the tradition of our culture and history, to be a tradition bound up with the seeking of peace. We're not interested in doing that as Quakers. Not because Quakers don't have a good way of doing what they do, but because we're not Quakers. And we need to find what the Jewish way is.
Another new trend within Judaism is the Havarah movement, a loose organization of small groups which explore Jewish culture. Many New Jewish Agenda members also belong to Havarot. Members gather to study biblical and rabbinic texts and to celebrate Jewish holidays. Judy Mizell, a Lithuanian concentration camp survivor, belongs to a Philadelphia Havarah.
In Judaism, to me, is built in so many beautiful things. I sit down and at the meal, and I don't do it all the time, but that there is a bracha that I don't sit down like an animal, that I know that even though I enjoy that steak, that a life had to be taken, that I don't just sit down and gorge myself. But I see all the murder and killing and destruction and nature being destroyed and everything else, that there is an awe for nature, that there is something that, and that to me is Judaism. And I really never think again about God, but I think about this. To me, I'll tell you, Judaism has never meant to me as a religion, because Judaism to me is not a religion, it's a civilization. Because if it would be for religion, how many Jews practice that religion? Judaism would have been dead a long time ago.
Many Jews agree that the cultural and political implications of Judaism are at least as important as the religious ones. Jeffrey Dacrow.
Jews can escape the problem of being seen only as religious by virtue of the fact that we also have a national aspiration and a national entity. The Jewish people are a people, distinct. We owe that partially to ourselves. And we frankly owe that partially to the oppression that we have undergone for centuries in Christian culture and Muslim culture.
But there are some Jews who believe the religious and theological aspects of Judaism have been neglected.
When I reflect back now on 12 years of religious training, I remember learning Hebrew, I remember learning history, I remember learning ritual, I remember learning culture. I really don't remember ever learning about God or ever having a feeling that God existed.
Phyllis Taylor is a nurse who works with the dying and has been active as a volunteer with Amnesty International. She became involved with the civil rights movement in the 1960s and eventually married a Christian civil rights activist.
He came out of Quaker background, and I attended meeting, Quaker meeting, and found it tremendously nurturing. Continued to go to Quaker meeting, but then really felt, I'm Jew. What am I doing in Quaker meeting? So I went back to the Jewish community, and I began studying with a rabbi again. And it was at that point that I realized that I was both Jewish, but also Quaker. That I was Jewish by background, but theologically had become a Quaker. That within Quakerism, I found a kind of integrity that I was not able to find in Judaism. That it was people speaking about God and translating that belief into their actions.
Have you become a Christian?
No. There's something that holds me to Judaism. It's that sense of history. It's that sense of covenant that was made so many thousands of years ago. There's also a sense of, you know, I question, would I be betraying the Jewish community if I became a Christian? Or would I be, in the most crass terms, would I just be helping to finish what Hitler started in terms of the demise of Judaism? And those things all hold me to being Jewish.
The threat of annihilation has always been felt by the Jewish community. It came closest to being realized during the Second World War. Judy Mizell was 10 when the war came to her small Lithuanian village.
And then I can remember a man coming to the house and saying that in Yiddish there was a fire burning, a fire burnt, and you have to leave this place because they're burning Jews from Poland. And people just didn't believe him.
Judy and her family were sent to a ghetto, were briefly interned at Auschwitz, and were eventually transported to Stutthof, another concentration camp in Poland.
The camp was surrounded by barbed wire, and there was a sentry on each end sitting like a little cubicle. And it was all controlled by electricity, and people simply used to commit suicide. It was the easiest way for them to die. And they, as soon as they went over, there were like three white lines. We went over the middle line, he would turn on the current and they would be electrocuted. So we would stand there and they would come and say, you know, left, right. We never knew which line came back. And did that every day, every day.
What happened to your mother in all of this?
Well, my mother died in Stutthof in the gas chamber. They took her, and then she, I clung to her when she was selected. And when I got to the gas chamber, they told us to get undressed. And then the guard saw me and says, you're too young to die. I'll count to 10. If you can run, I'll let you go. And I remember running and my mother screaming, Judith, life, life, Judith, run, run. And that was the last I heard in my mother's voice.
B'malot kedoshim, kedoshim utehorim.
Eventually, Judy and her sister escaped from the Nazis while on a forced march outside the camp.
So we went from place to place, and until we found every place we went, there was finally a price on our head because
we had typhus, and I had typhus now. And so the first one we were said was to go to a nunnery. And we went there, and the nuns were wonderful. But they said they couldn't keep us. They really were fantastic. They had, in Stutthof, they had torn my hair out, so I had nothing but a mask.
They tore your hair out?
They tore my hair out. Instead of cutting it, they just tore it out. So my hair was nothing but sores, and they baited and they took care of it. They were wonderful, but they told us we had to convert, that they couldn't keep, they were endangering our life. I began to know more about catechism, and I knew about Judaism, and I was being indoctrinated. So we left the nunnery, which was really, my sister and I would talk about a real foolish, that, you know, to do something like that.
At the end of the war, Judy and her sister were liberated by the Danes. Today she lives in the United States, where for many people, the Holocaust is only history or a far-off memory. The attitude that anti-Semitism is merely a rare aberration offends many Jews. Jeffrey Dacro.
Anti-Semitism is a reality. Jews do experience anti-Semitism. Some Jews don't know that they experience anti-Semitism, and some Jews are conscious of the fact that they experience it. There are a whole variety of ways. At the simplest, most unappealing level, Jews still get called Christ killer on occasion. I've been called a Christ killer in my life. There is also the very simple fact that Jews are being killed now in this world today. People who refuse to acknowledge the reality and the existence of those activities that are reported, that are documented, those are people who choose not to hear those things, who choose not to acknowledge it, and for whatever reason don't want to know that that's happening. I, as a Jew, knowing what the history of my people has been, knowing how marginal any minority group is in any culture in which they are not the majority and have control, understand that one must be vigilant about those things.
Many Jewish parents are anxious that their children be aware of Jewish suffering and the threat of anti-Semitism. A group of children at a national Havurah conference described the games they were playing.
Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, Donkey Kong.
What's Jewish Pac-Man?
They're trying to combine Pac-Man with anti-Semitism.
Ghosts are the bad guys, and the Pac-Man is the Jews. And, like, when you get a parrot pill, it's like God's helping you.
And then
you eat the enemies, and when you get back at the enemies.
Gives you weapons to kill the enemies.
Gives you strength.
And we put yarmulke on it to look Jewish, and we put all kinds of pails and seats and all those stuff to look like a Jewish Pac-Man.
And who are the enemies?
The enemies are the monsters.
They're the anti-Semites. And when you study Torah, you can defeat your enemies. It's like the power pill is the Torah, and when you study it, you can defeat your enemies.
Do you think there's a lot of anti-Semitism in America?
Yes.
Have you ever experienced any?
Last year when we were at the Chavra, my mom experienced something. She had a phone call while me and my dad and my sister were at the Chavra. And what happened was she got a call and said Hitler didn't go far enough.
In our school, there were like, with me and my sister are the only Jews in our school, and the kids call us names.
What kind of names do they call you?
Like, they call us Jews.
Well,
Jews, but I mean,
no, they
streets.
Think that it's when, a bad when, word. They call it as a bad word. And, you know, we saw two kids on a fight on the playground when we were walking home, and he said, "You're a real Jew, man."
And they
thought that they were cursing or something like that.
What did you do?
Well, I didn't do anything, but it makes me feel bad because when I walk out of school, people say, "Hey, Hebrew face, what you doing?"
While we were walking the streets of New York, we saw a big Nazi sign of Hitler on the street. We didn't know what it was, and so we started spitting on it because we hated it so much. It was very big, about this big. It was on the street, the Nazi sign.
In my school, on Yom HaShoah, when the day when it was the Holocaust, we talked about that there was a possibility of another Holocaust in the United States.
I still think they're trying to put out Hitler's speech to get rid of all the Jews and everybody else who Hitler wanted to distinguish.
Were there other people that Hitler wanted to destroy?
Yes.
Yeah, anyone that tried.
Homosexuals.
I don't see why some Christians think they're so big and better than Jews, because Hitler was also an anti-Christian. He said that the Christians were inferior. He only believed in an Aryan race, blonde hair and blue eyes. And for one thing, that happens to be a very dumb idea, because for one thing, he had black hair.
These people, it's their problem. Maybe they're jealous of us.
Why could they be jealous?
Because maybe we don't have as many problems as they do.
Because Hashem loves us more than any other nation. And he gave us the Torah and not any other, and they're probably jealous.
I don't think they should be jealous that we have the Torah. They probably wouldn't obey it anyhow.
They had the chance to have it. The Jews were the last ones asked by Hashem if they wanted the Torah, but all the other nations
so
asked...
what is it like?
They asked, what's in it, before they said, we'll take it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like Hashem said to them, it says you can't steal, and that nation stole, so they said they wouldn't take it. Yeah, but then he came to the Jews last, and they said, we'll take it, and then they asked what was in it.
I think that it's not exactly the Torah they want. I think it's they want that everybody should be like them, and they don't want any different people around them. Like they didn't want the Jews because they said that they're short and that they're filthy.
Do you think that since God gave the Torah to the Jews and chose the Jews from all the people of the world, do you think that says something about the Jews and about other people?
They're good people. And like they care about each other and they're nice to each other. And sometimes like the Christians fight with people, but the Jews are nice to people.
And even though people blame us for everything we do, we'll still stay together and we'll still be alive no matter who what happens.
Joy Levitt is a rabbi of a small congregation in northern New Jersey. She's concerned about the effects of historical Jewish suffering on her people.
I see them as threatened, paranoid, and scared. That doesn't mean that there aren't things out to get them. I mean, I do recognize that there are threats to Jewish communities. I think historically Jews used to, maybe I'm wrong, live as though there weren't. Otherwise, how do you live? But in some ways, I see my community, or see Jewish communities in the suburbs, maybe, as living because there are those kinds of threats. I think at their best moments, they perceive themselves to be the bearers of Jewish tradition, and they see that as an awesome responsibility. And especially outside a halachic or orthodox framework, they feel that they're losing the traditions of their ancestors by being expansive or being accepting, and they tend to tighten up. So I think there is a real fear of loss of Jewish tradition, and I also think there's a fear of grave anti-Semitism. Their behavior indicates a fear that is, I guess, typified by the expression, you really can't trust them. They might be nice now, but you really can't. And it's hard for me to talk to somebody who's a survivor and say, but it's not like that. Why should they believe me? My answer is, because if you don't believe me, you're worse off, because the paranoia and mistrust has led the community to be isolated, restrictive, and unable to grow. Interestingly enough, and I have to say this clearly, it's not so much pure Christians that the community finds difficult to deal with as much as Jews who are attracted to Christianity.
How do you think the Jewish community responds to your search for God that's taken you into churches?
Well, I had one person whom I respect say very clearly to me, I no longer consider you Jewish. And I guess I do feel that probably many people in the religious Jewish community no longer consider me Jewish. But I consider myself still Jewish. And that's important for me when I look in the mirror in the morning. I've got one foot in the Jewish camp and one foot in the Christian camp. And maybe I can be somewhat of a bridge. I think from the feedback I've gotten from some of my Christian friends is that they are far more sensitive to anti-Semitism, both overt or even covert anti-Semitism, because they know me now. And that's really fine, but it's lonely. You know, if you're a bridge person, you get tired because you've got people going over you, but there's nobody kind of sustaining you.
I want to tell you, when we left the nunnery, it was a perfect example. It would have been a lot easier to stay and become a Catholic. But the fact is that I only wanted to survive as a Jew. When you ask me, what am I? I'm not going to say I'm an American Jew. I'm a Jew. And that, to me, is the most important. I have a very difficult to tell you to defining it, but to me, the most important thing is that my home is Jewish, that I observe Kashrut, I observe the rituals, I observe the holidays. And while I'm doing it, it's constantly the same question what you ask me. Why am I doing it? And when, as long as I keep asking, I'm strengthening it myself.
One cannot escape one's Jewishness, ultimately. One shouldn't desire to escape one's Jewishness. One should want to affirm one's Jewishness as black power was something that blacks affirmed in the late 60s, middle 60s. We want to be able to say that it's a good thing, it is a beautiful thing, it is an important thing to be a Jew, that our culture and our history and our values and our religious life are all things that contribute to the wholesomeness of life in this world for all people, and that we want to be able to stand proudly and acknowledge that and identify with it and own it.
What would you like to say to the Jewish community? I'd like to say to the Jewish community to search more for God. One of the things that I ache is that sometimes I think, because of fear of annihilation, which is a very real fear, I don't minimize that, it's a very real fear, we have so compromised our own basic ethics and our own basic prophets that maybe the Jews will survive, but I'm not sure Judaism will. And I guess I'd like to say back to the Jewish community, hang on to the prophets, because that's what's real. Not necessarily the culture and not our fear. It is that more fundamental thing of God. I'd also like the Jewish community to know that not all Christians are out to get them, either to annihilate them or to convert them. And that's been very insightful and uplifting to me as I've also traveled in the Christian world. And I'd want to say to the Christian community to be incredibly sensitive to what's going on within the Jewish community, to realize that there is nothing that Hitler did save the building of the crematoria that was not part of official church doctrine. And a lot of what's going on in the Middle East and a lot of what's going on in Judaism that Christians might not like is, in fact, I think, partially Christians' fault because of their rampant anti-Semitism, either overt or covert.
The American Jewish community is not besieged by weapons and murderous instruments. But there is a feeling of danger, a feeling of peril that persists because of all the things that have happened to us. And that's inescapable. And a defensive and cautious attitude is also inescapable in response to that. I think that it's really important to figure out how to balance that urge, that need to preserve oneself and one's community, with an urge and a need to be a human being responsible to other human beings outside of one's own community. And that's the tension. And it's not surprising that Jews, that blacks, that Palestinians all resist that positive urge and succumb very humanly to the negative, inhuman urges, which bring on only more murder and more death.
I have a strong belief in whatever it is. It's God, it's something. My difficulty was to get back into with human beings and trusting. It's not that I didn't trust God. I mean, I didn't think as much of should I trust him or not. I mean, it's, who am I to say? I mean, he'll do whatever he wants and so forth. So it's nothing. It's mankind. I mean, right now, my biggest difficulty is what will it be for Aaron, who's 14 months old, my grandson? All right, I'll tell you a story. Aaron was born on May 8. He was supposed to be on the 21st of May, but he was born earlier, you know, and thank God everything was fine. I was liberated on May 5th, 1945. My brother was liberated on May 8. He was born on the day when my brother was liberated. When I went to Minneapolis and I held Aaron, it's like I held for 2 million mothers who never held. In the wildest dream did I never dream that I would survive the concentration camps, Nazi Germany, come to the United States, have a family, second generation, and then be able to have a third generation. That to me is that. And yet, when I think about it, what he might have coming with nuclear power, destroy, for what? And that is to me a very frightening thing. And I keep constantly thinking about it.
Wrestling with God, America's Young Jews, is part of a series of programs on religion in America called On This Side of Paradise. It was produced by Maeve McGoran and narrated by Anthony Mateo. Project directors were Ellen Cherry and Anthony Mateo. It was produced for the Temple University Religion Department at WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Executive director was Professor Gerhard Spiegler of Temple University. Production assistant was Greg Allen. Engineers were Jay Goldman, Fred Snyder, Joyce Lieberman, and Ron Carson. The prayer for the dead was chanted by Professor Saul Wax of Gratz College. This program was made possible by grants from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council and the Samuel S. Fells Fund.